Welcome to another episode of, oh no, it's the Ranieri Brothers, with your hosts, Thomas and Benjamin Ranieri.
Hello.
And today, we're going to be talking about worthiness and what that means, as I feel it's sort of a lost concept or something that people don't really consider anymore. So I figured it was worth a talk. We apologize for the spotty nature of our recordings lately. Everyone's been sick all the time, in a million different ways.
So many ways.
In so many ways. And so we're doing our best to get the thing out to you guys. I mean, actually, we're up to around like 20 or 30 listeners per episode,
whoop, whoop.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. We're happy to have you. I dream about all of you.
No.
And
no.
How much I love you. So, anyway, I suppose the way I want to introduce this is everyone thinks they deserve something. But the flip side of that coin is whether you're worthy for it. Because there's two aspects to it, right? You could be the best banker in the world, but if you're Bernie Madoff, you're not worthy. You're deserving in the sense of, you know, you have high status. You've done all the things you need to do to be really good at that job. But you're not you're not worthy of the trust that's implicit. You don't even probably consider it. And that's just one example among many. Yeah. For instance, a married man or woman who thinks, I deserve this mate, or I deserve that mate, I deserve these attributes. How many ask, are they worthy of a person who has those attributes?
Well, I'd also question their deservedness. I think this goes hand in hand, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that people often believe they have a right to something that they can't really pin down why or how.
Okay, so I'm using deserve in a more sort of colloquial or demotic sense.
What do you mean by that?
Like how I feel it's typically used, not the strict definition.
Sure, but can you define how you believe it's typically used?
Oh, it's, you know, I've achieved X, Y, or Z, or I have these things, whether they're attributes.
Therefore, I deserve the results of those things?
Well, no. Therefore, I'm worthy of the results of those things. Oh. It's a separate analysis. Like, if you're a piece of crap who's really good at making money,
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of money, you're successful, and you deserve the money because, you know, you did the work, you know, whatever. But you're not worthy of it. And there's no way to test for that.
Yeah.
Now, there's no one, and that's why I say, like, no one talks about worthiness. So you'd say, like, for instance, Jeff Bezos. It's a great example of this. Man has built a freaking nation, a corporate nation, globe spanning, huge, incredible achievement. Based on the rings of power, I'm not certain he's worthy of it. because he fundamentally misunderstands the world, right? To him, the part of the reason he was able to achieve what he was able to achieve is, in essence, a sort of perversion, of human economics.
Pandering to consumerism, which in and of itself is not a worthy pursuit.
Right. Exactly. The pursuit merely of money, it profitizes everything, but in profitizing it expends it. It's literally like people think about creative destruction. But the thing about the creative destruction of capitalism, or at least late-stage capitalism, has been the liquidation of cultural, religious, and other sort of shared values, you know, to increase the amount of money they can make.
Mm-hmm.
And because those things mean nothing to them in comparison to what the money they can make is. They don't have any respect for anything except for money. And so then they dissolve all of these worthy things so that they can get the money they deserve.
So, well, then I think I guess my at least devil's advocate piece, because I don't, first off, we have to I'd like to understand more about what worthy is. But before we do that, I'd say, like, wouldn't the fact that they did those actions and achieved those outcomes, you know, make them deserved of the results?
That's a fantastic question. Thank you for asking that question.
Did I play right in your hands?
No, you didn't play into my hands, because actually at first I felt like a little challenged and scared, right? When it was like, crap, I haven't really done the work that you just described, and it makes me feel worried. But then I was like, no, I actually have an answer for this. I've been thinking about it a lot, and I've never verbalized it. So it may be a little rough around the edges, but I have an answer for it. And it requires you to look at society as an organic whole, a sort of, the collective human action of the human tribe or hive.
The community.
The community, right? But, the idea is, you have these hierarchies and these layers, so everyone knows what they're doing and who to answer to and who to tell to do what and all that stuff. It brings order to the chaos that would just be, just pure individualism. Everyone does what they want to do. Nothing's going to get accomplished. So regardless of whether people admit it or not, they're part of the, if they're in society in any sense of the, they're participating in this very large game that we're playing. And I don't mean to trivialize it by saying game. I just can't think of a better word. Social ritualization. It just seems to me that it's a set of rules that we've developed that is useful for bringing about the best outcomes as possible, without being overly burdensome or tyrannical on the people that we're living with. Now, if that's true, the question of who gets what resources and for why? Like, who gets to decide, like, what the efforts are going to be? Because it can only be certain efforts. And if you, because you can't do everything, right? And so the big, like, civilizational efforts that we undertake are decided by a very few number of people. And they don't take it seriously.
That few number of people.
Yeah. And by which I mean, they don't have any conception of being ordained by God or having some spiritual responsibility, cultural responsibility to the people that they're supposedly governing. And they're even in denial about the fact that they are, in fact, governing. They like to pretend that they're not because it excuses what they do. Well, I'm just a capitalist. So it's okay that I exploit people because that's what capitalists do. Right. And you don't have anyone else there to be like, well, no, you have to stop. Right. And that's what the aristocracy and the kings were there to do, is in part to keep the bourgeois from becoming too exploitative. Because the bourgeois, being the merchant class, I've always tended towards that capitalistic and individualistic, we'll say objectivist sort of mindset.
Well, my question would then be like, instead of the few people that determine, like, how these things get done, was the game, to use your game analogy, because even though I didn't like it when you first used it, I think it's a good way of talking about this. If the rules of the game were set up beforehand, in this case, Constitution, Articles of Amendment, and the like, and people are just playing along the rules of the game, then, aren't they within their right to be deserving of the results of the outcomes if they're playing with the rules?
Well, there's two answers to that question. The first is, by their fruits you shall know them. If the rules aren't getting good outcomes, they're not good rules. I'm not certain we're getting good outcomes, which makes me think they're bad rules.
Sure.
In the first place. In the second place, the rules of the game are not written down on paper because no one respects them, right? The actual rules of the games are the ones that get people to change their behavior. And people love to shout about a breach of the Constitution here and a breach of the Constitution there and the massive breach of the Constitution when they do X, Y, or Z. But what happens? What happens when politicians break the Constitution?
Nothing.
Therefore, it's not the rules of the game.
Okay, sure. That may be true and real, but for people brought up thinking that they are the rules of the game, like, let's pretend we're going to give Jeff Bezos the benefit of the doubt. We'll have to put reality on hold for a while, but I think we can do this. And he grew up in the USA, and he was taught and believed that there are these set of rules, and if you play with these set of rules, and you do the actions, and you make a successful company, and you employ a bunch of people, that you should, you know, have the benefits of your labor.
Right. So what you're saying is, like, doesn't, under the rules, doesn't he deserve to have what he has? Yeah. And my answer is yes. That's why there's a problem with the rules.
Sure.
Because they don't account for this question of worthiness, of nobility of spirit.
Sure, but then, okay, I like the fact that we've now defined worthiness as nobility in spirit. Well, let me go back, though, because nobility in spirit, he may, like, outside looking in, we might judge him and say he is not worthy, he has no nobility in spirit.
Of spirit.
Of spirit, sorry. But at the same time, he, with the as much morality as has been taught to him, as much as he's ever been able to learn, and within the vacuum of his life, like, he believes he's done the most worthy things he can with the money and the tools provided to him. He hasn't taught different. He doesn't know different. Once again, we're kind of suspending reality for a little bit, but he's brought up with this idea of justice and morality kind of being bound to the U.S. Constitution and the rules that were set up. He's never really questioned the rules.
That's generous.
Yeah, I know. I said we're suspending reality. Because here's the thing: is that maybe not Jeff Bezos, but there will be a business owner who is, you know, successful to varying degrees that believes this is true. I know a couple that are, you know, they're not as big as Jeff Bezos, but they have a $20, $30, $40 million company, and they're not doing anything good with it, but they employ people, which is one of the highest goods that a business owner can do, according to them. And they put in the time and the effort, and so they deserve and are worthy of the benefits of their labor.
I'm not disputing that. I think you're taking it too far.
Then that person is worthy.
No, not necessarily. But they're. I'm trying to make it distinct. So I mean, you're conflating some things here. In the first place, you're in part talking about culpability. Sorry. I put my hand in front of my face. I'm sorry, guys. You're worried about culpability. You know, when you start talking about people's personal knowledge of things, that to me sounds like you're worried about, like, that I'm in some way judging them or somehow saying they are, you know,
culpable.
Well, no, because worthiness is an attribute, right? So it's sort of like, you know, I would, like, if someone's smart, you know, this is like, and they're, but they're, okay, this is a great example. That's perfect. Thank you. So.
You're welcome.
Pimp.
Oh, okay. We went there. Let's do it.
Knows how women work without any illusions and what he can do to get what he wants from her. And he can, and they do it, right? So they have consistent results, right? And there are books about it. They've written books about how to do this work. I mean, it's soul-sucking and terrifying, but I can see how it works because it is truly authentic to the, you know, the female spirit. They have a massive amount of power in that knowledge. And they choose to use it to dominate and exploit. They deserve the money they make because they're very good at what they do. Are they worthy of it?
But, well, within the rules of the game, they aren't. It's not legal.
Well, that's an interesting question. Is the law applied equally?
No.
Okay. So if the law is not applied equally, it's really only, it's not really the rules of the game. The rules of the game say you can usually get away with stuff as long as you don't do certain things. You pay people off unless someone else gets a bug. If you piss the wrong person off and they decide that they're going to get you trapped in your own graft, if you're a politician, for instance, then that's what you're going to get caught up because you went after a fish that was too big for you. Because that is one of the first rules you got to learn about the actual game, which is that big screws small, period. And if you are smaller than someone that's bigger than you and you cross a line, you have no excuse, if you know what you're doing, to be surprised when big screws you. And so the thing about Jeff Bezos is that he's not playing by the rules of the game. He's one of the guys who makes the rules of how the game is played. And that's one of the reasons his ability to figure out how to do that and to get to where he is one of the reasons he says how society works. Society doesn't tell him how he works. And so within certain confines, obviously there's a limited amount you can do within the within the spectrum rules of society, but well, those are sub rules, but yes.
Yeah.
And again, to them, it would all just be about what can I get people to accept and what can I not get people to accept.
So then, kind of going back to worthy, nobility of spirit. Do you believe that people? Let's just keep on with the Jeff Bezos thing. You know,
maybe we say his name enough, he'll appear in our living room.
Oh dear Lord, I hope not. I would have.
What are you saying about me?
Yeah. I would, you know, I'd rather do, you know, Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then challenge him to, you know, a fighting match because that'd be fun. Not because I dislike Elon, but.
I'd like to talk to him about theology.
I'd like to talk to him about theology. I'd like to talk to him about a lot of things. The and he's serious about. You heard about, just a small digression here, but, like, did you hear about the. Who's the guy that owns Facebook again?
Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg. The Elon Musk Zuckerberg fight.
Yeah, there was supposed to be a fight.
There was supposed to be a fight, and the only person not responding to emails is Zuckerberg.
Oh yeah.
And Elon Musk is like, yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
What the problem is? He's worried about the prosthesis coming off and his lizard skin.
Zuckerberg, you know, has been training to fight for, you know, over a decade, and Elon Musk has been in, like, fist fights in South Africa his entire life and then has continued training, and he weighs just considerably more than him, so Elon's not worried.
I wouldn't be worried if I were Elon.
Exactly, neither would I. But, like, that makes me want, like, I now want to fight Elon.
Oh, you want to fight Elon. God bless you.
That'd be fun.
Okay.
I mean, all things being considered, it'd be a blast. I mean, if he's not too, I don't know.
I'm not pugilistic like you.
It's not about the fight. Well, all right. So, yes, I'm pugilistic. I mean, it's not like anger or like worthiness. It's you know, curiosity, and it's fun, and it's a good place to find out where you're at, you know, and also to a certain extent, and not just Peterson, but like even Catholic theology goes into, you know, you have to train your mind so that you can be intelligent and know God better, etc. You have to train your spirit so that you can be more worthy of God as much as you can be and to gain heaven. And you have to train your body so as to, one, support your mind and spirit, but also to protect your family. And if your body is, you know, it is underdeveloped, if you haven't been working on it, then you're not going to be able to defend your family as well. You're not.
Oh, I'm 100% on board with that. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fine. But, you know, like, I think we can agree that you have a certain amount of relish for a physical fight. Like that I don't have. And that's
because really, you just haven't been in enough of them. You'd get it. You get a taste for it.
Do you really think so?
Although I hate relish. Pickles are no.
Pickles are amazing.
Pickles are awful.
They're so good for your digestive system.
You know, so is sauerkraut. And I like sauerkraut, but I hate pickles.
All right. Well, then
I like a lot of pickled things, just not cucumbers.
You do you, my man.
I'm going to. Back to worthiness.
So I guess, you know what I'm actually trying to get at here is at least in part, it's a perspective or mindset issue. Because someone who thinks they deserve something isn't looking at it like a gift. And isn't showing gratitude for it. And that's part of worthiness, is showing gratitude for the things that you're given. You know, if you deserve something and that's really the primary way you look at it, then it's yours to dispose of as you will. You know, it's yours. You deserve it. It's your property, in a sense. And there's no way that these big companies, these big corporations, these guys don't see people in that light.
Don't see people in that light of disposable, you mean?
Yeah, disposable. You know, they're here to serve me. You know, I have the money and I can afford to pay them. And so, you know, they're here to serve my needs, you know, within the sense, like, that's it. It's a very simple sort of mercenary transaction. There's a reason that we looked down on mercenaries, or we had in the past. And it's because they're not worthy. They, you know, it's not a matter of like who's right, who's wrong. They don't have moral dilemmas. It's if you pay me money, I will kill people for you. It's, you know, it's a really simple sort of thing. And so the question of like if you are given for whatever reason the amount of money that Jeff Bezos is given, and you don't see that as something more than just you. Is something of like, because if money at this point, if fiat currency is basically shares in a corporation that is the United States of America, mm-hmm. If you get all these shares, I mean, sure, buy yourself toys, have a nice house, blah, 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 blah. But you're responsible for this massive amount of GDP of the American economy, like this massive amount of money in the American economy that can make or break lives, right? The money has taken on a character beyond mere wealth. You know, you literally have your hands on, you know, like on the steering wheel of society, in a sense. Yeah. Do you deserve that? I don't think anyone does. I mean, we need people to be there. But I don't think that's something, a job that anyone could say, I deserve this job. Like, I've really got this figured out, guys. Don't worry about it.
Like when you run for president and you get it, you're like, I deserve to be president. Like,
right.
No. You should be grateful you made it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, too, because, you know, from a Christian perspective, it's a lot easier. It's, you know, we're not really deserved of anything. We've been given everything. You know, God gives us all of our blessings. All good things come from God. And so all of the things that we get are from Him. And we are to, you know, realize that we're not deserved, that we are sinful creatures, and that we should always be grateful to Him for the blessings we do have. And then repay those blessings, you know, by showing love and charity towards others and bettering our community and doing more for those around us and bettering ourselves while at it. You know, so to that point. And then, of course, like you said, and I loved your analogy of, you know, money, because it's not based on anything, as a fiat currency, is shares in the government as a corporation, and thus you have a responsibility. Like if you own stock in a company, you have a responsibility to vote for the best board members, to make choices, to, you know, steer that company in the best way. And in that same way, as you're buying shares in this country, you have, even if you're a small shareholder, you are nonetheless one that has to ensure that that company, in this case the country, is run well, is bettering its people and its community, and is, you know, there for the for the, you know, freedom of those people.
So humility is, I think, a big part of worthiness.
Yeah.
So, like, and so, so I, that's me building on what you just said. That's not me contradicting you.
No,
you
know, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. So, but in essence, like, that's, again, like, really honestly, you know, in a lot of ways, to figure out what is worthy and what is not worthy, I looked at how people in Washington, D.C. handle things. And then however they tend to handle things, I think with the opposite virtue of the vice that they, and then I identified that as probably being a sign of worthiness. Because I don't know that I've met a single person in Washington, D.C. Well, that's not true. I've met a few, but most are not worthy of the power or positions they hold. They don't take it seriously, so they don't see it as being a, you know, a divine burden, in a sense. They've given power in some limited way,
yeah,
and one of the most powerful empires in the world, and like they're arguing about like office chairs.
Well, I was gonna say I heard an interview recently, and I can't remember where at all, and it must have been Sunday since I can't listen to anything during Lent, but the it was somebody who knew a, you know, a high administrative staffer on the Hill, and was like, basically had this conversation with this, you know, staffer that was like, I would vote for anyone that actually came in with a plan. Like they're like Frank Underwood from the House of Cards, evil guy, really out for himself. And maybe it was a bad plan, but he at least had a plan. He is like one of the most inaccurate depictions of our government in House of Cards wasn't any of the horrible, horrible things you saw. They're like, those are all real. Those are all things. It was a congressman who was actually talking about this. That's right. Those parts were all real. The most unbelievable part, unrealistic part about House of Cards was the fact that there was somebody that had a plan that was so far reaching as Frank Underwood's.
Most politicians are people pleasing reactionaries. And their power comes from saying no. Because if you say no, you have to be bribed to say yes. And so the entire basis of their power in their minds, because they can't think beyond stage one, is that kind of like, well, if I say no, I get something, and I'm not in this for anyone but me. So there it is. You know, I'm saying no until you give me a reason not to. That's why we get these ridiculous bills.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're not incentivized. The incentive structure is not to work together. They actually profit more from disorder, because then it allows them to bribe different sectors of the economy. You know, we mismanaged this, so we'll put some people in charge of that who probably keep mismanaging it. But we get to say we did something about it. And in the meantime, we get to give a bunch of people jobs who now owe the government their, you know, their loyalty.
And their livelihood.
And then we'll also get a whole bunch of vendors and government contractors who then supply that agency, which then allows us to funnel money out to these people who then will donate to our campaign so we can stay in power. And so, like, the whole question of what's good for the country never really comes into it, because it's not what's good for the country. It's what's good for them. I'm at the point now where I listen to these politicians speak, and I'm like, the fact that people still believe any of this nonsense is insane to me.
Well, there's certain ones. Like Rand Paul, I respect.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. That's why he doesn't get anything done.
Right.
Because he's the only principled guy there.
Well, there's probably a couple others.
Oh, you know, I like Ted Cruz. People can say what they want to about him, but I like
him. I've been back and forth on Ted Cruz, but I do like him. Tuberville.
You know who I love is Senator Kennedy from Louisiana. I could just listen to that man talk all day.
Yeah, I mean, there's he's RFK actually. You know, as much as I disagree with a lot of his political opinions and a lot of his stances, I respect the hell out of him, and I do believe he's being honest.
Well, I believe he's being honest, and I certainly think that, you know, he's been brave enough to tell the truth on one thing, but he's still a moral coward. I mean, he's a liberal. A liberal is a moral coward.
Yeah,
almost by definition.
Would we really define him as a liberal more than just like a Democrat? Like
he's old fashioned liberal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're the ones that lost are the ones that are here now because they weren't as extreme.
Right.
So he's just a gateway liberal.
Right. So he makes him look a little bit better.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's like, you know, Protestantism.
Right.
This is the most slow motion apostasy in the history of the world. It's like 1,000 years for them to realize that they're not really Christian anymore.
Oh, gosh. It takes me like, what was it?
500 years, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 500 years, over 33,000 denominations. There's more denominations of Protestant.
I think it's like 63, 73 now.
It was 33 when I was in high school. Yeah, when we were counting. Yeah. But like, there's more denomination of Protestantism than there were weeks since Martin Luther. What's up?
So let's talk. Well, that's a great example, actually. So one of the central claims of Protestantism is like, I don't need a priest or bishop to tell me what the book says and means. I can decide for myself.
Right.
And be correct. Well, hold on there, bucko. If you're correct and your correct definition, disagrees with some other Protestants, either one of you is wrong or you're both right. And if you're both right, you're both wrong. Right?
Correct.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I understand what you're saying.
So it's sort of like, they shut themselves off. But there's the idea that, no, I can decide. My reason is sufficient for me to understand the Word of God in all of its complexity. Well, do you speak Hebrew? No. Do you speak English? Kind of. You know?
Like, or even if you speak English, well, you don't speak Hebrew. Do you speak Aramaic? Do you speak Greek? You know, no.
Do you speak Latin?
No. Well, Latin later, but like, yeah. You know, the weird thing is then, you know, one of their facets, Sola Scriptura, none of this is found in the Bible at all. They're not really pulling from anything. If anything, you take the Bible as a whole, you don't even need to go to the New Testament, which it's easily found in, but the Old Testament, where God spent all of Leviticus and Deuteronomy and Exodus, well, not all of Exodus, but a lot of Exodus, explaining to the people how he wants to be worshipped. God explains to the people how he wants to be worshipped. The people, if they whenever they pretend like, oh, we know how, they make a golden calf, or they go and do something stupid, and then God's like, well, now I have to kill you. We need a reset for your own soul's sake. I have to get you out of the way, and for the souls of others, and then we need a reset. And then I have to go, okay, now what did I tell you? How did I want to be worshipped? Oh, yeah, there you go. And then I forget again. And then all of a sudden, well, now you have Christ, who's God, who tells us how to worship God. But then the Protestants come around, and they're like, well, we don't want to worship God the way he told us. We want to worship God the way we think he wants to be worshipped.
The way we think he should be worshipped.
Right, exactly. So they've taken it out of God's hands again, and they're putting themselves above God.
In that sense.
And they're saying, okay, well then, I'm going to worship him the way I want to, the way I think he wants it, even though he told me how he wants it done.
Right, and so then what are they're substituting their own judgment, right, for not only like against the judgment of God, arguably, because, you know, everyone can play with these things. But I mean, I agree with you, but I mean, for the sake of charity. But they also don't consider the massive responsibility. And the thing about the Catholic Church, you could say a lot about the Catholic Church, and I will.
Okay, we're going to edit that out. Scandal.
I don't agree with you that it is, but I will for the sake of this argument.
I can find the proper citations in the catechism.
I don't want to argue with this. I told you I'd take it out.
Okay.
I could say plenty about the Catholic Church that I don't agree with, or that the, you know, about the behavior of the bishops. But what's encoded into every aspect of the Church, even now after Vatican II, in the way that they talk about things, and the way that they move, like, you know, the way that they do things, just the entire culture of the Church has a sort of real solemn reverence for and humility about the tradition that they're living to uphold. There is, you know, even when it's not taken seriously, you have to abide by it, right? In public, you have at least show the social understanding of like how important this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
In the way that they act and behave. And I mean, it's a shame, you know, obviously the things that happen, but
yeah, and it's a shame that people don't always listen or even learn enough about the Catholic Church to understand that those are the things they're supposed to do.
But they have this great solemn reverence, and the reason why there's such huge structure in the Church is in part to keep things stable. Like these things, they're so, like we've seen, you know, they're so easily diluted. They're so easily misunderstood. They're so easily twisted for the purposes of the person quoting them. Well, you have, but with the Catholic Church says every Sunday, you know, every day, this is the reading you read. This reading is related to this reading and this reading because of the saint. It's all interconnected, but it's all clear. You know, on this day, every 4 years, you're getting this reading, right? And so it provides that stability of meaning. It's why Latin is so important. And it's so important that it be dead, because hell loves to twist language, and they can twist language to justify anything. It's really hard to twist a language that is not really open to interpretation anymore. It's dead. It's not evolving. This word has a certain meaning. That meaning's not going away. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the devil hates Latin. Because when you speak in Latin, you cannot help but speak the exact truth of what you are saying. And that is a huge weapon against the Prince of Lies.
Yeah.
It's much, in a sense, much harder to lie in Latin.
Yeah. Amen, brother. Amen. A woman.
Let's give a fuck.
Yo, now I got you to say that, Pop.
You know, but again, that's again, it's looking at yourself as seeing the thing that you're getting, whether it's, you know, like the, you know, like the money isn't the power, how you use the money is the power. But more than anything, we have this concept of economic power.
Yeah.
This concept of political power or martial power, and that it's more than the sum of its parts. And so while you do have to build up these building blocks to achieve this thing we call economic power, it is not merely the collection of those things. It is now something else, because you have taken upon yourself the ability to make decisions that most other people cannot make. And that means that you are, in essence, putting on the mantle of something greater than yourself. You are grabbing onto the spirit of something, or you're, you know, it's very difficult to talk about because it's really high minded.
But no, but that, no, it's a good point, though, because and I agree with you. In fact, I haven't been able to disagree with you since basically you went off on your big piece on unworthiness. And I thought that the conversation was just going to end there. It is this understanding that, you know, oh my gosh, I hate to say this. I really hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. With great power comes great responsibility.
Right. Well, that's another way of saying you must be worthy of the power that's given.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that if you want power and you accumulate it, and then actually, this isn't contradictory at all, because if you want power and you perform the actions and you achieve it, and you achieve that economic power or that political power or whatever, maybe you are somewhat deserving of the results. But one of the fruits of that labor is the fact that now you do have power. Now you do have responsibility. And as much as that, you know, is not something that you might have considered at the time, But one of the fruits of coming to that custody, to getting to that point, is now that you have a family to take care of that encompasses a large portion of the population, that encompasses the structure of the game you're in and the rules that you're playing by. And so now you've accumulated that power, and now you have to accept one of the fruits. Yes, the power, the money, the influence, and the cars, and the whatever, but also the responsibility over other people, the power over their lives, and the point of and having to perform your duty as a father to them well.
Right. If you're going to presume to have children, you have a responsibility to raise them right. You made the decision to, you know, to bring them into this world. They're now your responsibility. You made a massive multinational company. Congratulations. You have a massive amount of power. You're not allowed to use that power however you want to, despite the fact that you, quote unquote, deserve it because you've built this company. And it's like the company is, like I said, it's just one aspect to it. I think what I'm saying is, I think you're hitting the nose right on the head. And I want it, because I was going to talk about this earlier, but it's something that I've been thinking about lately about marriage too. Marriage is an institution, you know, you're going into, it's supposed to be, and you're going into it. It's more than just, I want to be happy with my husband, or I want to be happy. It's like not about that. Okay. It's about procreation. You're bringing into your family a woman who sometimes you're not going to like, and she's not going to like you. And it shouldn't matter, because sometimes you don't like the people you're sharing an institution with, but if you care more about the institution, then what you do is you learn to, you know, let go of that. Or, you know, I mean, obviously there's improvements that need to be done, et cetera, but.
Well, the idea is that, to your point, that, you know, marriage is a choice. Love is a choice. And love is also an action. So, well, sorry, choices are actions, but act of the will. You chose to get into marriage. You choose to love the person. You're not always going to like the person. And you're going to have to choose to overcome that, because you choose and you act for love, which means caring about the other person for their sake, not for your sake, but for them. And that is that's the point of marriage, is for you to get the other person to heaven while they're trying to get you to heaven. And to unify and to procreate. And then the point of love is to care more about another person than yourself. And love requires action, not just the choice, but also, you know, physical actions that back up what you state verbally.
Are you telling me that faith alone is not sufficient? That there must be acts? I'm kind of joking, but that's the truth, is that
right.
It's not enough to feel or to say you feel or to make the decision to love someone but then not act in accordance with that love or what that love should mean.
Right.
That's kind of false. It's kind of a lie in a sense.
It is absolutely a lie.
You know, but
especially because feelings change all the time. And like you might like and you might dislike and you might love and you might fall out of love, as far as the feeling of love, not like the actual choice.
The decision of love.
Yeah.
The good stuff.
And, you know, that's – it's all part and parcel. You it's great that you feel bad for the homeless person that's starving and needs a drink of water. But unless you grab a water bottle – and intentionally give it to them to drink out of, your feelings about it don't matter.
They're trite.
They're not going to help him. He's not going to care that you have bad feelings about it, that you sympathize. Oh, I wish he didn't have to go through that. Well, okay, well, can you give me some water? That would be better. All right, it's not a good action. It's not an action, like, it's not love or charity if you're passing by a person that's, you know, in need of water and your water bottle falls out of your hand accidentally and they're like, oh, I guess they can have it. That's also not an act of love. It has to be intentional. You have to have the feeling or have the decision, care about the thing, and then go and do it. Like they say, you know, I'm thinking of you. Well, thank you. Great. That doesn't do me any good.
Right. It's the California thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the California versus New York joke.
No, I don't.
So there's the, so basically, like, I'm not going to tell it in a pithy way, but, you know, a New Yorker will stop on a bridge to help you replace your tire and curse at you the entire time. But a Californian, if you text them and say, hey, I need help, will say, hey, man, that sounds really bad. I'm hoping that you get through this okay, and then do nothing. And then the kind of thing is like, which one is nicer? Well, the California way. Which one is actually more valuable? The New York way.
Right.
And because in part they're like wow, how can you not get this figured out by now, right? Yeah. Like, wait, this is the Big Apple. Everyone's moving. Come on, guy, idiot. Pick it up. Yeah. Right? But not like, I hate you. Just like, hey, you stupid idiot. What are you doing? Come over here. I'll show you how to do this. What are you doing over here? No one ever taught you this. Come here.
Yeah.
You know?
Or even if they didn't do that nice, like, you're an effing idiot. You stupid effer, blah, blah, blah. But then they fix it. Like, that's still more valuable than, you know, I'm there for you, man.
Yeah, I'm morally supporting you, right.
Like one thing is, I am praying, like, if Catholic, our prayer, you know, the prayers matter, like, I cannot be there. So, like, I am unable to actually help you. So I will pray for you. It's the only thing I can do.
Right.
There's an action that you can take. But outside of that, it doesn't matter. It's meaningless. And you know, and you, like, what is, I mean, like, you're not always going to want to do the things, you know, like whether it be marriage or whether it be something a little bit, you know, simpler, like Christ feed the hungry, you know, you're supposed to visit and help the sick. You're supposed to, you know, minister to those in prison. You're supposed, like, do you want to go and do these things? No. St. Francis didn't want to go to the lepers. He was terrified of lepers. He did the worst thing in the world. But he went and did it. And a multiplicity of others. And if you went in doing it, like, cursing, you know, like, pissed and angry, you're doing the action. Now, would it be better if you did it in love, kindness, and charity? Yes. But it would also be better to do it angry than not to do anything at all.
But to feel real bad about it.
To feel really bad about it.
I feel really bad about this. I'll think about you while I'm dancing at the club.
Yeah. Thank you. Man, I wish I could visit the grave of my loved one, but I'll think about them and I will, you know, have a beer in their honor. I'm like, okay. You know, you can at least say a prayer.
I sure hope that's not a poke at me.
It wasn't a poke at you. Should it be a poke at you? I'm not tracking your movements.
No, I know that, but what's that going
to do? Yeah.
But just real quick, because there is a specific point I was trying to make about this, but no one, again, I'm a husband. I've got a wife. You know, I went out. I got her. You know, obviously she had some say in the matter. You know, we created a family. We have children. I deserve these things because I've achieved these things. But am I worthy to be called a husband? Am I worthy to be called a father? Am I really doing that work? Right? I get the title because I'm in the place. Just like Senator What's-His-Face, you know, has the title. He did the work. He has the title. Great. Fantastic. It's just, there's a disconnect there that I think it shows up everywhere now, where no one's considering, like, no one really considers the idea that perhaps merely having something doesn't entitle you to it. Or, you know, that a way of getting something is to become worthy. One thing I have noticed is a personal thing, personal development thing is, when I started thinking of myself, like, I'm going to stop trying to get ahead. I'm going to stop trying to fulfill, like, a grand plan and to make things work the way I want them to work. Not only because it doesn't work, at least it won't work for me right now, but more than that, well, why should I have them? until I'm able to explain to myself why I'm confident that I should have the things that I want, I should probably shouldn't have them. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, so then I need to make myself worthy. And what I want is, you know, I'm not going to say, but I have certain goals that, you know, you're familiar with and desires that. And so what I'm not worried about achieving them because I'm just worried about making myself worthy of someone who actually could take that ball down the line. And if I do that, I just sort of assume it's going to fall into my hands. Because, like, everyone's like, who could do that work? Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about it, like, there's all this Trump stuff. Everyone's into Trump. But if Trump was dead, who would take his place? There's no one worthy.
Trump's not worthy either.
You know? He displays love for his followers, love for his country. He's demonstrable about that love. He made decisions I didn't agree with, but I never thought they were unfair.
But once again, worthiness requires a certain amount of humility, which I don't believe he.
He has humility in there's some ways he has humility, some ways he doesn't.
Right. Well, I mean, but at the same time, here would be my big question, and maybe we can probably end on this: is anyone able to be worthy?
Well, I suppose then, no. No, it's, you know, the only, yes, Jesus Christ.
Sure.
So if you can, you know, if you can follow Christ's example in, you know, in a limited way, I mean, because, you know, like.
I guess then it's more like you could be more worthy.
Right.
You can never be worthy, but you can be, you can have different levels.
Right.
More worthy.
I will, the best way to put it, a worthy person from our sense, a good enough worthy, yeah, would be someone who's like, you know, thank you for this honor. I shall endeavor to be worthy of it.
Yeah.
Knowing that I will fail, right? That's what a worthy person would say.
Yeah.
Right. And so a big part of it is seeking the good of the thing that you're engaged in as higher than yourself. So like, for instance, like this is something I'm trying to do right now with my wife, for instance, like I'm like a control freak in the kitchen.
Yes.
And so as a result, I've driven her crazy. And so now
anyone that's around you while you're in the kitchen.
Right. Or when she's cooking. So right. Even when she's cooking, I want to pull like a Sheldon Cooper and go in and be like, you're doing this wrong. You're doing that wrong. Or complaining about what she decided to make or whatever. Because it's not what I would do. And I'm so freaking smart. Right. And so what I've tried to do is like to be like, hold on a second. What's more valuable? What's more useful? What's better for the family? That she's in a good mood and that she gets what she gets done with a minimum of interruption. And then if the food isn't particularly my taste or whatever, like I'm not starving. Right. It's not like
she didn't have to cook it.
I didn't have to cook it. Like, how about I just eat it and be grateful that there's food at my table? And guess what? The family has, you know, and now everything moves more streamlined, more closely, more effectively with a minimum of fuss because there's no one complaining about itty bitty things all over the place. Like the point is I'm putting the good of the operation of the family above whatever like little prickly things that are inside of me. And that obviously hurts some sometimes, but at the same time, I see this great value and I'm like, see, well, this is a worthy effort. This is something that's making me a more worthy father.
Right.
Not a worthy father.
More worthy husband, more worthy father.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And don't I want to be that? Because before anything else, if I say to someone, I'm a father and I'm going to be proud of it, I sure as hell better be able to explain why I deserve that. I put my wife ahead of needs and wants ahead of mine, my children's wants and needs ahead of mine. I'm imperfect at this, certainly. I'm not claiming anything like, but keeping that in mind, I think, is one of the signs of being a worthy father.
Well, because a large part about being a father and is love, and love is sacrifice. And
love is sacrifice.
If you're not sacrificing anything and you think everything is good to go in your marriage and in your family, you're wrong.
Right. I deserve love.
Right.
I deserve this. I deserve that.
Or even like you have love, you have all of these things, or at least you think you are, but you don't have a sacrifice. Like people that are in these relationships that don't sacrifice for their marriage or for their family, which happens. I've seen it happen. That's something's wrong there that just hasn't come. It hasn't, you know, come to the melting point yet.
Well, this is, I think, point. Right. And again, I think this is another reason why marriages have tended to fall apart. And it's because, you know, there's an escape hatch. Mm-hmm. And as a result, like, I understand that I'm in this thing for life. So I can either make the best of it or make a mess of it. By the way, it's going to be my best or my worst. It's going to be mine. But there's no escaping from it. You know, I can't wash my hands of it. Even if I could divorce her, I wouldn't be able to. Right? Yeah. No one is.
Right.
So, unless they're complete jerks. And that's the whole thing.
Well, yeah, because once again, love is a feeling, or because they're all looking how they can get their own needs met.
Exactly. It's meet my needs.
Right.
And it's not that. It's we help each other meet each other's needs and learn that you don't get everything.
Yeah.
You can't always have what you want. It's a really simple concept, but I deserve this. No, you actually, what you deserve is to be tortured.
Yeah.
Every single person deserves to be tortured. The amount of sins that we, like the evil that we wrought, you know, that we wreak on the world, even unknowing.
Yeah.
Means that, like, who knows how much damage we've caused by merely existing. And we can either get all weepy about it and not do anything about it and to show, like, you know, not give the homeless guy the drink of water, feel bad for him, and move on our way and pat ourselves on the back for having compassion, but not acting on it. And it's like the only things that can make us worthy is when we realize, ah, crap, we're not good enough. We do make too many mistakes. I don't deserve, in a cosmic sense, anything that I have.
Right.
Yeah.
But we get the hope. We have hope.
Yeah.
That if we do the things and if we practice, you know, responsibility, if we practice love and we practice the, attempting at worthiness, that God will not only forgive us, but reward us and bless us even further. Maybe not in the ways we want, but that's absolutely essential, is that we have hope. Without that hope, without that understanding, why do anything at all? If we're worm, we just do horrible things.
That's the first step. I think the second step is we have to have faith that there will be a final victory. I don't mean in some weird, like, I mean like a final victory of God.
Yeah.
Right. Where all things. Well, so final victory is something that the Nazis used. I realized. So that's
right. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that's they're going to have their 1,000-year Reich, and they're going to get their
final victory. Oh, their utopia. Yeah.
Retarded. But But we have to have a hope in the final end that, you know, that all these things, all this pain, everything is, you know, ultimately going to be to the good. Right? Is we can't see how it all fits together. Mm-hmm. And finally, we have to have love or charity, because the one thing is, like, everyone's caught in the same trap. Like we're social animals. There's a flip side of that coin. And that is that we're social animals, which means that we have to be around people, even if those people suck.
Yeah.
And so the rule is basically, like, you can't, because you don't like people, you can't just remove them. And I don't mean that in the sense of, like, I'm not going to hang out with Billy anymore. I'm talking from a more, like, global perspective. It's like, well, I don't like this person or that, this person or these people who have these views or have this skin, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, so we'll just liquidate them. And so that's going to be the solution to the problem. And it's like, no, yeah. You just made everything worse, right?
Oh,
so,
Canada.
Right. And and so, you know, like, you know, that since that's not a solution, you know, what we really need to do is, like, everyone's walking. Some people are more lost than others. But I'll tell you one thing. Everyone's miserable. And some people are more miserable than others. But everyone is having stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone's struggling. And everyone's at a different point. And you have to have love. Make sure they're not as far along as you are. And maybe you are so far ahead of them in so many things. But, you know, all that – if you're a good man – all that means is, like, you know what they say is, what is a bad man but a good man's project? like, and so, like, you know, if the most wretched deserve the most sympathy in the sense that, you know, the most charity, I guess, in regarding them, because they only thing that you can give them that's going to be any good is to try and help them get them better. But one thing that's not going to help is telling them what a piece of crap they are, because that accomplishes nothing.
Or just to think good thoughts and hope they get better.
Right. That's actually worse.
It is worse. Like, you know, tell a guy that's starving that you sympathize and walk away. He's going to curse your name. Tell a guy, get off his ass and give him a loaf of bread, and he might actually listen to you. But like at the same time, you know, love is, you know, love is kind. All of those things. But, you know, love is providing what is best for the other person. And sometimes what is best for the other person is not what they want to hear. And maybe it might be painful and it might be difficult. And you shouldn't do it in a malicious way. You shouldn't do it in a mean way as best you can.
That's unworthy.
But they do need the hard lesson. And especially for the person who's furthest down, like, you need to help them. Like, for, let's say, homeless, starving, dehydrated, and a horrible, like, a just wretched, horrible sinner, murderer, whatever. Well, you need to help him on multiple levels.
Racist.
Yeah. racist and sexist.
He's a racist, fascist, and a sexist, and he listens to Eminem.
And an extreme white right-wingist, ringer, whatever. There's two things here. You need to give them enough food and water to survive so that you can communicate with him and hopefully get him to a point where his soul will be saved. You know, you need to provide for both. You can't give the man a starving man scripture and hope that he gets better.
Right.
I'm
starving and evil. Well, let's deal with the evil part first.
Yes. Here's the first page of Genesis. Can I eat that?
Right, exactly. And when you're good, I'll give you food. Again, that sounds like manipulation. It's unworthy. Yeah. And again, like, that's a big part is too. If you decide that you're going to try and help someone, if they're going to take you seriously, one of two things will happen. Either they don't take you seriously because you're not worthy to say they're not worthy in their eyes to make that kind of criticism, or they will take you seriously, which is even more serious because now they're accepting, in a sense, some programming from you or thought pattern from you. You better be damn sure the thought patterns you're giving them are actually good for them.
Right. Right. And this goes back to, like, one of our earlier podcasts when I was talking about fathers. You have just so much power over your children and your family and how they think that you better be sure you know what you want to put into their heads. Like, they're looking after you in the same way. There are people that when, you know, you go to them, they'll trust you and they'll take what you say on faith, and then they will go forward. I do jail ministry, and when I'm in with those prisoners, I'm the authority in their mind. It's terrifying. And so I have to educate myself. I have to, leave some option for them to think outside the box, open, and I have to help lead them. But if I have to give them a truth, I better make sure that truth is true and I'm not just making it up. You know, it's a huge responsibility because they're going to take what I say on faith and they're going to take that and run with it. So I have to be more worthy to be able to be in that responsible, in that position of power.
I think that's all exactly correct. And there was something very specific I wanted to say about that, but I forgot what it was. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good place to end it. It kind of weaves into everything because it's, to me, it's a first principle. Like, if I want something, the first thing I think to myself is I have to be worthy of it. But I've never really expressed that, like I said. In any case, hopefully we can talk about this again, because especially when we look, I think it's really helpful for, as a paradigm for looking at like what's happening and how to distinguish the people who are more or less trying to take it seriously and the ones who are using it for their own benefit.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll be back. I have faith that we will be more consistent now that, you know, spring is coming. And I hope that you have charity with us as we figure out a way to systematize this and to expand our reach. Obviously, please leave a comment, subscribe, share with your friends, the ones that you dislike as well as the ones that you like.
We especially want the disliked ones.
Yes, we do. There's no such thing as bad press. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us and have a blessed evening.
Happy, joyous Lent.
Happy, joyous Lent. Be sad in the right way.
No, it's just joyful.
Good night. Good day. Whatever.
Good day. I said good day.